Hey everyone, welcome to the Mental Agility for Forensic Scientists podcast brought to you by MAFS. I'm your host, Jen Dillon. Today's conversation is with my dear friend and yoga colleague, Juliette Oppenheim. Juliette works as a first responder, so she is intimately familiar with how important it is to develop resiliency as a means to mitigate stress encountered on the job. She and I met through teaching yoga, and we quickly connected over our mutual desire to strengthen the mind-body connection and help others to do the same. We talk about how a solid self-care plan and entering the field later in life has cultivated a safety net of protection from vicarious trauma and burnout for her, and how that differs from my experience of jumping in headfirst without a plan at all. After our conversation, I'll speak briefly about how we can create a plan that can be tailored to our specific needs. I also hope to post some self-care assessments to the MAFS website, so be on the lookout. All right, let's get to the conversation with Juliette. Welcome. Thank you for being here. So why don't you, we'll start with you, and you can tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in, first of all, in yoga and also in your profession.
Sure. The real story of how I got involved in yoga was a third party. My sister was really sick. She's anorexic. And my other sister and I were like coming up with ways to help her become more comfortable in her body. And so my older sister suggested we all do yoga together, but it was really a ploy to get Diana to do yoga. And and so that's how I started, was in a true caretaker fashion for like somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then it evolved obviously through the years to teaching, which is very also caregiving.
Yes. I now teach. It'll be coming up on 9 years, I think.
And your field of employment is also caregiving. So I think it's in your blood.
Yes. Thanks, Mom.
And so you are a medic?
Yep.
Yes?
Yep, I'm a paramedic.
And how long have you been in the field?
3 years now.
So you and I are very different in that you developed a self-care plan that includes yoga. I'm sure it includes other things as well, but so you were involved in self-care for a lot longer or had a self-care plan in place for much longer before you started your career. While I probably spent a good 10 years in the field before I really started taking care of myself in a very mindful sort of way. So I think that's kind of how we connected was over our professions, right? So how do you think that your self-care plan has helped you thus far?
I think what is the advantage is that when I come on scene, right, or to a 911 call, and maybe people call 911 for all sorts of reasons, I don't get angry that it's not a quote unquote true emergency. This is like, whereas other people in the field, they're like quick to anger. They feel like their time's being wasted, that people are using and abusing the system, using and abusing them. So they like take everything very personally. Whereas I don't really struggle too much with that. And that impacts the care that's given.
Absolutely. And then what would you say as far as experiencing what you would consider to be a true emergency, do you feel like that also keeps you from going like outside of the window of tolerance, right? From where you can be in your normal self-regulated zone?
Sure. I think it's foolish to say that I'm untouched, you know, by the work. But I think that after maybe a particularly grueling call or horrific scene, there might be like a day or two or three where I feel a little out of sorts. That's maybe a nice way of putting it. Out of sorts in the sense where I have a harder time interacting with, you know, the average, like people who are not in my field or just the general public, right? Because they just don't know what I had witnessed or been through. but it's never lasted, I would say, more than 3 days. So I think maybe my recovery time is within the realm of normal in like an abnormal situation, right?
Yeah, no, I get that. I would say that my experience, interestingly enough, was that I could go to a crime scene and see all of the things that I was seeing and spend hours upon hours seeing that visual. I mean, talk about visual overload, right? So much stimuli that I was unfazed. I was unaffected for a really long time. And without having an actual self-care program in place at the time, I suppose I had a bit of a natural resiliency to it because I was, first of all, very excited about the career field and saw myself as someone who was able to make a change. Yeah. And while I was experiencing those things, that was my self-care at the time, right? So I was excited that I was actively feeling like I was helping the community. And I think that's what kept me resilient for a really long time. After a little while, I think that wore off. Not to say that I wasn't affecting the community as well, but I don't think I was feeling that anymore. You know, the honeymoon phase for me had worn off. And then on top of that, I think I started to feel stress from the administration side of the job. So feeling less supported at work. I might not, that's just my experience. I'm not saying that I technically was less supported, but I started to feel that. And even if it was me creating my own narrative. So then I found myself in a hole and I had to actively climb out of it and intentionally create a self-care program because one didn't exist.
Yeah.
And I actually found yoga for other reasons, but I started applying it to work because I recognized the mind-body connection and the healing that can occur and knew that I think already applying it in other areas of my life and started to realize that I needed it, you know, to recover from the things that I was seeing. So it's interesting you talk about recovery time because I think that I started at the very end, I had to take a break, which is likely a permanent break from scenes. But at the end, I was upset before I would go to the scene just because I knew that it was going to affect me. I would go to the scene and being at the scene was fine. I would pull it together, right? And I would be okay. The defense mechanisms would kick in. And then I would notice that for 2 weeks after, I was moody, I was depressed, I'd have insomnia. It might not even be that I, you know, sometimes I would have difficulty like getting the images out of my mind. But honestly, for the most part, it was just avoidance, lethargy. You know, I didn't want to interact with people. And I was mostly frustrated I'd go to work and be frustrated because I was feeling as though I was like, don't you know what I just saw? Like,
yeah,
right?
Like, I am totally.
Like, don't you just sometimes want to wear a sign that's like, by the way, I see messed up stuff all the time. Yeah. So I deserve to be treated with kid gloves.
Yeah. By the way, I just saw a guy ejected out of a car.
Yeah. Treat me kindly.
Don't talk to me.
Yeah, because your tolerance level just gets depleted,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm not the only one.
No.
So interestingly, I mean, you say that your recovery time is a few days at best, but during those 3 days, I anticipate that you're engaging in extra steps of self-care along the way.
Yeah.
Like, can you take me through what does self-care even mean to you? I guess we probably should have started with that.
Well, that's okay. When I think about self-care, there's like two sort of portions of self-care for me. And it was like the initial portion, which was like when I maybe first started or in my younger years, it was like working through and managing all of my inner turmoil. That I've had for whatever, like, you know, myriad of reasons from childhood or young adulthood. And it was like all mitigating depression and anxiety and just figuring out how to like exist without being a train wreck. And to be fair, I can't say that I'm not a train wreck, but I'm more okay with being a train wreck now than I ever was before. So, but now I feel like I have my sort of inner turmoil under wraps, and it's, so I still do all the things, which include, like, you know, cooking meals and exercising. And one of my favorite self-care things to do is having, like, a luxurious morning with coffee and my two cats. And that's it. We just, like, hang out and sip coffee, and I pet them, and it's...
Yeah, that's my idea of an ideal morning. Swap out the cats for dogs.
Yeah, sure. Anything furry. Or not furry. Turtles are good. But now it's evolved in how can I care not just for me, but also for, like, the world around me. So now I do other things that I feel like are self-care that make me feel good about how I interact or navigate in the world.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
No, I really like that because... So my definition or thoughts on what self-care is engaging in any practice that can help me to show up in the best way that I possibly can. So whatever that means to anybody. So I definitely agree that starting my day in an introverted sort of reflective, quiet way for me is really important. And that's, you know, I never got up early my whole life. Like I was like a wake me up 10 minutes before I have to be at work kind of a person. And my colleagues will tell you that I'm still probably late all the time, but now I'm late because I get up and I'm having coffee and I'm studying and I'm reading some yoga philosophy to get my head straight. And that's what works for me, you know, usually with two dogs in my lap, you know? So
yeah.
I agree. The other day I had a day off and I went to an indoor garden because I needed to see some live plants.
Sure.
And just, you know, the lady was like, how can I help you? And I'm like, I just am here to walk around. Like, I mean, yeah, I ended up buying like 3 or 4 plants, but.
Girl after my own heart. Yep.
Yeah, but for me, just spending some time in nature in the middle of Michigan in the wintertime, that was kind of what I had available to me, and that's what I needed. So I think it's recognizing what self-care means to you and then not being afraid to have it not fit into a mold, right?
Yeah.
Because, and I think you and I preach that in a yoga studio from time to time, that it's okay to be different and whatever works.
That's right. Right? Yeah. There's, when I was in therapy many years ago, I had this realization that there were like 7 billion people on this planet. Therefore, there are like 7 billion different ways to live. That was like really liberating for me.
Yeah.
To like not feel like so confined.
Do you think that being open about self-care at work makes you vulnerable? Are you open about self-care at work?
Am I open about self-care at work? I, you know, maybe it depends, I think. There are a few people that I feel connected to that I can share with, but EMS is pretty, it's like a pretty gritty field and like gruff and tough, which I like a lot. But I think there's also a downside to that. And a downside, I think, is, and that's not to say that anyone's ever like truly shamed me for saying something. But there's like a rough sort of sense of humor. My ride or die, Maria, she's always razzing me for, let me guess what you did today, Julie. Yoga.
Yeah, when I started practicing, I instantly earned the moniker Zen Jen.
Yeah.
It's in a loving way, but I'm like, cool.
Like, but it's like a way to like disconnect or distance, like for, you know, for whatever reason. And I know if Maria is not razzing me, there's a problem, like with our friendship.
Yeah. So you would say that it's not culturally within the first responder world not talked about.
Correct. Oh, well, self-care is talked about, but it's like the, maybe the antithesis of, you know, people like talk about how much they drink or...
Thank you. That's where I was going to go
with that. 100%. Right? Oh my gosh.
So make crass jokes, you know, finding a way to lighten the subject matter of what people deal with.
Yeah.
A lot of people might unload by partaking in food or beverages. I've definitely come home from a scene and eaten my way out of it.
Yeah.
100 times. For sure. For sure. And I like to think that I came up with this on my own, but I did not. Brené Brown, who I'm a huge fan of, wrote in one of her books, you know, she said that you can numb things and that's fine, but just so you know, you can't numb selectively. So if you're numbing out the bad things, you're also numbing the joy and the good things. And yeah, right? Goosebumps?
Yeah, I got goosebumps.
Yeah, so that hit me pretty hard when I read that. I was like, yeah, she's probably onto something there. Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, in the field of law enforcement, first responders, for sure. And the reason why I wanted to bring this whole topic to the field of forensic scientists is because I feel like we're the forgotten ones, because people think we're just sitting in a lab and we're not out there seeing things. First of all, we are if we're responding to scenes, but just imagine yourself sitting at a lab bench staring at a pair of pants that were literally cut off of someone while they were being tortured. Like, what do you think thoughts are going on in your head when you're processing an item like that, or a little kid's shirt and it's all bloodied?
Yeah.
I mean,
even if you're not,
your mind can make up a crazier story than what you maybe would have even seen.
Yeah.
And we don't have the adrenaline either that I think protects first responders in many ways.
I'd say that carries me through many a times. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not numbing things anymore. Well, we aren't, but many people are in the field, you'd say.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
So you think positive aspects of self-care, there is or there's not a stigma around it, other than lighthearted jokes and comments. I mean, if you came to work and said, that scene really affected me emotionally, I need some time off, how would that be handled by your administration?
I'd like to think that they would be responsive to that. Actually, I know they would be. There have been not ever for me, but I know there was a house fire, and I think 3 kids died in the house fire, and there were three units from where I work responded to that call, and after that call, they all got sent home.
That's great.
They said, just go.
That's great. Was there a debriefing before they went home, do you know of? Or maybe the next day when they came back?
I know we do have debriefing, and we have a therapist who specializes in PTSD. So that's really nice. But, you know, I don't know how often people use. Mm-hmm. I've never used her. And I don't know if I would. I feel like I would rather...
If you didn't... Do you think it would be because you feel personally don't want to do it or uncomfortable, or because you think that people might find out, or...
I think it's more of a personal...
Yeah.
Yes. Because I would find it difficult maybe to, like, debrief something traumatic I've seen with somebody I've never met. Like, without having a rapport with somebody.
Yeah. I'm open about the fact that I went to see someone in the behavioral science unit, and it was for the sole purpose of talking about how crime scenes have become less enjoyable for me. Like, I was like, I went from wanting to go to every single one to dreading the phone call, literally looking at my phone and experiencing angst. When I would take the call, I would set boundaries for myself and say, these scenes affect me the most, so I'm not going to respond to those scenes, right? So I would set my own boundaries, and then I would get the call and be unable to respect my own boundary. And so I would go, and then they would affect me afterward, and it would be, you know, perhaps weeks, sometimes. And so I went and communicated all of those things, but I totally understand not having the rapport because I talked so vaguely for the first few weeks because it's so emotional. That's some raw stuff to start talking to a stranger about. And it was difficult.
Yeah, like the seeds are raw, and also like the reaction we have, I think, is really raw. And sort of this, for me, it's like a lot of uncharted territory, although it might be like common knowledge in the field that this is like a totally normal reaction or thought that you're having. But for me, it is not normal. It is not common. And I don't trust you.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it. And I said that. Like, I was like, sorry, it's going to take a little while. Like, let's talk about some other stuff and work our way up to it. And yeah, it was hard. And I like what you say about your reaction being especially raw, because what happens is that you see something and you connect with it in some way. And man, once you make that connection, like the analogy that comes to my mind is like it's a paperclip that you string paperclips together, and you've just attached this seemingly professional experience to a very emotional connection, maybe from childhood or maybe from, you know, whatever it is. So
sure.
I see a picture of someone at a crime scene and I recognize that that person reminds me of my aunt or, you know, whatever. And then you instantly connect that on a personal level. And I would have emotions that would come up. I was just talking about this to a colleague the other day. I don't have kids, but there was a big part of my life in which I did want to have children, and I would go to scenes and they would bring up all of these feelings of me wanting to have children and I wasn't able to, and whatever the circumstances were, now I'm crying on my couch for 3 days about something that the scene brought up that I didn't anticipate and want. Like, I'm like, you're invading my personal space.
Yeah.
Work. Like, get out.
Get out.
And I would hear things. It was really painful because I know that no one said it maliciously, but the whole, I'm a parent, so children scenes are really difficult for me. And I always took such offense to that. Like, yeah, I must be a child hater because I don't have kids. Like, that's obviously not true. And children's scenes really, really personally happen to affect me. And I don't think anybody thought that they should.
Or they it wouldn't probably, be as bad, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't be as bad. Like, you should go to it because you don't have kids. And I don't even know if they really meant that or felt that, or that was the narrative that I told myself in my head. And I don't know if it matters, you know?
Yeah.
So here we are, talking about trauma instead of self-care. So it's an emotional moment.
Yeah.
It's hard. Since we can't unsee the things that we've seen, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that those situations build up over time? So you might be fine for 5 years and then all of a sudden you're not.
I think that's to be determined. I've only been in the field for 3 years.
What about people you see, like your colleagues that have been around for a while?
I think some of the things that you've shared, I have seen in coworkers. Like getting angry when the tones go off when we get a call. Like angry to the point where I'm scared. Like, as a new, you know, I was an EMT, like yelling, swearing, punching the side of the ambulance.
Yeah.
And then getting their ish together for the call. And then afterwards, whatever, you know, maybe taking a nap or eating, hating life, it seems like. Yeah.
Have you seen someone in that state make a transition towards a healthier response?
I'm shaking my head no.
Okay.
I have not seen anybody in the field.
Yeah. And I have to say it because I'm someone who that's what I'm trying to do. And that's my motivation behind this entire program is because I know that I was someone who went from it being literally my dream to respond to crime scenes. I enjoyed it so much. Not in a sick way, but
sure. Yeah, I
loved it. And then it was that very thing that I loved made me physically ill and emotionally raw. And I felt like a victim. Well, you know?
Maybe in a way you are.
Yeah. I like the past tense because what it made me realize was like, okay, well, I'm in a giant hole. How do I get out of it, right? So I started trying to climb myself out, and self-care was the only ladder I could find. I started finding as much knowledge as I could to get myself out of that state. And I haven't returned to scenes, but I know, like, when I stopped seeing the therapist at the behavioral sciences unit, like, we both agreed that I could respond to scenes. Like, he was like, the way that you talk about them, the way that you maintain eye contact, like, you know, he was like, I agree. I think that you could do scenes, but do you want to? And my answer at that time was the amount of work that I would have to do to maintain where I'm at right now seems overwhelming to me, right? Like, I climbed out of the hole, but was that hole like a whack-a-mole hole? And as soon as I pop my head out, someone's going to knock me right back in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I happen to leave it. I like to think of it as an unlocked door that I could open back up. And I've thought about it from time to time. I love teaching and training. I love talking about it. I love so many aspects of it. So I like to think that, yeah, you can turn that around and climb out of that hole. But my goal really was, let's not put people in that position and let's give them the tools so that they don't have to ever climb into that hole. They've got a safety net in which they can fall in. And I mean, that's the state that I hope that you're in, right? With this wealth of knowledge and not just the knowledge, like, you developed a practice, right? So that's important to talk about, that it's a continual practice.
Yeah. And there's like an ebb and flow, like, some, you know, there's periods of time where I'm maybe less good at it and periods of time where I'm better at it. And that's okay too. But I definitely feel like I have an advantage coming into the field, like, older and with that under my belt. It's not like, self-care is work, but it's work that now is more natural. It's more like the way that I live. So it's not as challenging to maintain. Whereas I can imagine somebody who, you know, in EMS, people come like right out of high school. Like, when I was in school, with 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
18, 19-year-olds.
Yeah, I was 23.
Yeah.
When I started.
So young. People are so young going into the field. And I'm just like, you have, like, I don't want to say no lived experience, you know, but.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. I did have a manager once tell me that the reason I was starting to be affected by crime scenes was because I was getting older. And I disagreed with the statement at the time because I felt that I could pinpoint many other reasons, but looking back on it, it is valid that as you age, you begin to maybe recognize the consequences and recognize the value in life.
Yeah.
And so when you see it lost or wasted, I started thinking, probably in the beginning of my career, it was just like, look at this victim, and that's sad, right? But then as you get older, it's like, well, look at this victim and the family that's affected, and the suspect, the perpetrator that's ruined his life, and the family that's affected. And suddenly you sort of put it on this scale that it always was on, and maybe you just didn't realize.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can really... Yeah, when you're younger, you know, you just sort of...
You're invincible, right? And so is everyone else.
Invincible and maybe a little more, like, hyper-focused. And then, like, as I've gotten older, like, everything broadens, has become bigger and brighter and fuller. And it's, like, so lovely in that way you're saying, like, not numbing that out, but also, like, you know, there's a converse. There was something you sent here about what's the difference between my self-care at work versus self-care at home.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth mentioning that my self-care at work is, I don't even describe it as self-care. I was like, what do I do at work? And what I try to not do at work is the thing. I try not to eat like and that's like the max I can do. Like when I, from when I started school to the job, I gained like 20 pounds. And 20 pounds is like whatever. I actually don't care about the number, but just like realizing how unhealthy. Sitting in a truck for 12 to 16 hours a day, eating Taco Bell. And those times, like how you say you would eat yourself out. Sometimes like after a call, I get so hungry. And I like the call might not be like physically strenuous, but maybe it's emotionally strenuous.
Yeah. And then you make those connections, right?
I'm like, oh, I can eat like, let's go to Taco Bell. I got to eat like 6 tacos and those nachos.
Hey, those nachos are delicious.
And I need a bag of hot Cheetos, which I still eat, by the way, but not like a bags a day.
So I agree that self-care, so for me at work, because our jobs are very different in that for the most part, and me no longer, but we're not out in the field, right? And mm-hmm. and if we are, so I would have two very different answers. Number one, if I'm in the lab, so I basically have an office environment type job, then my self-care is, you know, not eating at my desk. Actually making myself get up and walk away for a new environment, a space away from staring at my computer screen, or getting up and taking a walk, or on days in which I really need to pay attention to something, turning off my email notifications, right?
Yeah.
I know I have some good notes about some other things I do. Obviously, I don't do them often enough for me to remember what I do because I struggle with self-care at work versus when I'm at home, it's different. Let me ask you your thoughts on, you know, taking a mental health day, which I dislike the term very much. The reason being, I think when you say I'm taking a mental health day, that's code for I'm taking a day off so that I can chill. And I'm, you know, even if you're like, I'm taking a day off and I'm going to get a massage, people don't hear that as in, I need a break to physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically take care of myself mm-hmm. because I have depleted all of my resources and I need to, you know, when a car runs out of gas, we take it to the gas station. But when we deplete our resources, it's like, sorry, girl.
Not in our fields.
You got to go to work. Right?
Yeah.
Gotta get those cases out the door.
That's glorified even. Like, or maybe...
It is. I don't know about... Yeah, this is what we do. Buckle down. You wanted this job.
Yeah. Suit up, show up. It's like a joke. Like, oh, you get 6 hours of sleep? Well, I get 2. Look at how I can function.
Right.
It's like this... It's really glorified at how much we...
Can take on.
Yeah, and don't care for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a badge of honor.
I know. Which is ridiculous.
It's annoying, yes.
but either way, getting enough sleep to me has become, like, universally, if I need to put resources back into my body, to me, sleep is number one. And it's an interesting scenario because the more stressed out I am, the less sleep I get. And I have these lovely nights full of insomnia and racing mind, right? Sure. So for me, that's huge. Definitely had to learn to say no to the coffee at 3 p.m. And take care of myself in
What's
that way.
Secret?
I don't know because I just did it the other
just
day.
Just kidding, I work nights.
I just went and got Starbucks at 2:30 p.m. and was like,
"Before your off time,
why am I awake all night thinking about this podcast and all of the amazing things we could talk about?" I mean, yeah. My mind just went right into the rabbit hole, and I was like, "But I'm so interested in thinking about this." And next thing you know, from 1:30 in the morning until 4:30, I was awake.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one's a huge one for me. Yeah. So that one's hard for me. But if I were in the field, when we process crime scenes, I would tell you that very often we would not eat. Forget not sleeping. Of course, we would not sleep. We would not eat, and we would not go to the bathroom until it was like dire situations. And I finally, I think, got to the point where I was like, nope. Like, I'm doing the pee dance for like 3 hours. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even doing my job to the capacity that I can be doing my job. It's now to the detriment of my own job because I'm refusing to ask this police officer to take me for a ride to Tim Hortons to go to the bathroom. And so that was, for some strange reason, but that was the culture.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they trained us. And processing crime scenes, by the way, different from first responders, no emergency. Ain't nobody leaving.
It's just tedious.
It's just so tedious. And so I think it came from, look, we're going to be here for 12 plus hours, so let's just get it done. Let's not take breaks. Let's just barrel through and get it done. But thank God things have changed somewhat, and so we have sleep regulation schedules. Like, you can't be up for longer than 24 hours. So if I were up for...
What a regulation.
I know, right?
24 hours, eh?
Hey, I've never experienced it, so I don't even know what it's like.
Yeah, I think I wrote down on one of the things that self-care for me is like, maybe when, even if I don't have enough sleep or my apartment's a mess, it's like spending time with people or doing something that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Even if I'm like, got one eye closed and, you know, I'm drooling a little bit.
I've walked out of dinners, I've not had holidays, you know, you name it, I've done it. And I'm sure everyone in the field has, you know, I'm definitely not alone. And that's a big factor in self-care, right? So someone with appropriate practices in place, if that time was meaningful for them, would learn to recognize and set boundaries and say, I can't
actually stay up for 40 hours.
Yeah, I can't do it. And I will say that I think that I know some people who have done that, and there was stigma attached to it.
Yeah.
Because it was, oh, I'm sorry, you think that
you're more
that's
important
more important? Yeah, there's stigma attached to that. So hopefully that will change.
I hope so too.
Hopefully you are being a part of it.
I hope so too.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And
thank you, Jen.
Namaste.
Namaste.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Juliet and I regarding our self-care plans. Thinking about your own self-care plan, keep in mind that the goal is ultimately to create an insurance plan, right? It's a tool to help us to self-regulate our moods and our stress levels and keep our mental patterns as healthy as possible. There are lots of levels to a self-care plan. And if you take any sort of quick Google search, or hopefully these will be up on the MAPS website, but you can start thinking about a self-care plan as having a physical level, a psychological level, an emotional level, and a spiritual level. So if you take a look at the things that you do and just ask yourself these questions, you know, what am I doing on a physical level to take care of myself? What am I doing psychologically to take care of myself? And so on. And maybe even just to make a list of those things. If you find an assessment, it'll likely have a box of things already listed under each category that you can just tick off. And then you can get a bigger picture of what you are actually spending most of your time taking care of yourself with, you know, on what level. Are you taking care of yourself in all of those ways? only professionally or only on a personal level or, you know, only on an emotional level, but not a physical level and so on. So it's a really good way to get a big picture idea of what's going on. So check out the website. Again, I will put up a couple assessments and also some professional impact scales and assessments so that we can get an idea of how some of the stressful environments that we might find ourselves in are affecting our quality of life and how we can use a self-care plan to mitigate some of those stressors. So thanks again for joining us. And as always, if you want to keep connecting, feel free to send me an email at jdillon4n6@gmail.com. That's JDILLON4N6@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.